The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
So, can you reparent yourself?
Getting more complicated. I'm wondering, am I doomed?
No, I love it because the reality is, yes, you can. And the thing I had hoped to share with you, which is that I remember when I really began to understand, thankfully, that my childhood trauma history was influencing and really had a direct relationship to the health consequences that I was having.
Cue music. Places, everybody, places. We're starting in 3, 2.
Welcome to the Autoimmune Hour, where we look at the rise of autoimmune disorders. I've brought together top experts that range from doctors, specialists, nutritionists, researchers, and even those recovering from autoimmune to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information about autoimmunity and how to live your life uninterrupted.
Thank you for joining us here on the Autoimmune Hour with Sharon Saylor. Always seek sound legal, medical, and or professional advice regarding any problems, conditions, and any of the recommendations you see, hear, or read here on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune and Life Interrupted Radio. Join the Autoimmune Hour's Courage Club. Sign up now at understandingautoimmune.com. Now, back to your host, Sharon Saylor.
Welcome, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour. I'm Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com. And as always, it's my honor and pleasure to be with you here on another brand new episode. Oh, my goodness. We just had a snowstorm. Don't know about where you are in the world, but it's kind of late in the season for us here. That was a lot of fun. Actually, I actually got a lot done, you know, being forced to stay in the office and stay at home, get a few things done, which was good. I got my cup of tea here, so I'm going to. Yeah. You know what? I've started to try hemp milk. I don't know if that's available worldwide or not. But it is here. It's got kind of a nutty, woody taste. I put it in my chai tea today. I think it tastes really nice. I'm going to put that on the list to try that again. I hope you guys got a cup of tea, whatever you're curled up with, because I have a really fascinating friend here. You probably remember her friend, Jessica Jimison, was on the show, I don't know, a couple of months ago. I'm trying to think how long ago it was. Michaela Giles is with us, and she is the co-founder of Origins Collaborative Care. And I asked Michaela to come because she and Jessica are this wonderful match of, what I'll say, coming to the same place and having so much different life lived experiences and education and everything else. They just make a wonderful match for Origins Collaborative Care. And let me quickly give you a little bit about her background. She considers her most valuable learning to be her own experience. She is a survivor to thriver story. It's a wonderful story. And she's charted a course of healing from severe, complex, chronic illness. She'll share a little bit with us. And she's on a mission to save her life that eventually discovered the pathway to healing that transformed her life and the way she dreamed it possible to be, and now she's sharing with others, including us tonight, on how we can make that dream come true for us too. So welcome, Michaela. Thanks for being on the show.
Oh, thank you for that kind introduction, Sharon. Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
Oh, this is so exciting. Now, one of the things I love on the show is, as you and I have chatted before, about this idea of one of the nice things in a litany of things that maybe are not so nice is when you find someone who's already been down the path.
Absolutely.
Or they're a little bit ahead of you on the path even. And I love to call that survivor to thriver. Some people call it mess to success, whatever. And you and I were sharing about, you have a very complex medical background. So share a little bit about your story with us.
Sure. That's true. I do. And I want to acknowledge what you said, because I think for the people who come to us, we call our patients members. It certainly does help to have someone who has been there before and really can relate to what you're experiencing now and give you some hope. My story really involves very severe, complex, chronic illness that played out over the course of about 11 years. And you mentioned Jessica. She, at a certain point, became my provider at that time. And we worked together really in a way that inspired me to survive, really. She was someone who was such a different kind of provider in terms of the depth of compassion that she offered, her belief in me and the stories that I was telling her about my symptomatology and everything. It was just very different from the experiences I was having. And she always really believed me and really believed that I would eventually heal. And at certain points, I was deeply suicidal. And so she really helped to save my life in that way as much as anything else.
I think that's one of the critical things for me, too, as you bring that up, was those turning points. The first few places I sought care after my big diagnosis, the one where I couldn't push away or say, oh, it's not really happening to myself, I went through several doctors who I felt like, oh, it's all in your head. Your blood tests are fine. It's not really happening. And something about knowing you're not alone and somebody that believes you. Oh, okay. Confirming my sanity was really important.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's no question. In fact, like most people, at a certain point when my health first collapsed and I woke up one morning with really intense neurological symptoms, I thought I'd go to a doctor and they'd tell me what was wrong and we'd fix it.
Yeah. The take two aspirin and you'll be fine type of problem.
At least, or even, I mean, even if it was something really complicated, there would be somebody who knew, would recognize the symptoms and figure it out. And, you know, my hope in that waned. It took quite a while for it to wane, but nevertheless, I believe that somehow we would figure it out. But ultimately, it was years and years and years of symptoms and all the systems of my body and seeing different specialists again and again, turning up no really remarkable findings, nothing that every now and then there was something. That you would usually give me hope that it might be the cause of the whole thing. And then it was really kind of crushingly disappointing. But you're right. I think over a period of time, being so sick and having it continuously advance and become worse and worse, while being met with either a lot of compassion and not knowing, or in many, many cases, pretty dismissive doctors and healthcare providers who really made me feel like, right, this must be a me thing, somehow psychiatric or psychological. And so I really began to feel over time incredibly protective. It was hard to feel secure in my own knowing. While I was being doubted this way. And in the meantime, you know, as this played out over years and years and years without a clear diagnosis, the doubts, this is actually a Dr. Neil Nathan, something he wrote in his book Toxic that really touched my heart, which was that those attitudes from medical providers eventually do spill over to family and friends who love someone who has complex chronic mystery illness, right? And there isn't a clear path to what's happening, and or it isn't one of the placebo-controlled, double-blind, already like accepted medical diagnoses that some people expect or respect. Ultimately, it really was part of something that really made me feel extremely isolated. It broke down my relationship with my husband, who was an extraordinarily wonderful human being, but really like distanced me from family and friends and further isolated me. So I really felt very, very alone.
Just bringing that up into my mind quickly, talking about the pandemic didn't help. I know a number, including myself, but I know a number of people where if we are already having those things going on in our lives, having what little support system we had collapse around us was pretty traumatic. I want to talk to you a little bit about trauma, because I think a lot of people are right now sort of a mass trauma in a way of walking wounded as we're coming out of this. But people who are especially medically, I don't like the term fragile, but it's the only one that comes to my mind right now, had the greatest amount of isolation during that time.
I think you're right, actually. It's interesting because I was just beginning to really heal and start to thrive when the pandemic started. So I had sort of a built-in resilience for the kind of isolation while coming back into my
own state. It's so funny you mentioned that, because a couple of times people were complaining about masks or isolating or whatever. And I was like, welcome to my world.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But that being the case, like I do know, for example, a lot of our members, we call them members, our patients are our members, a significant number, maybe 70 or possibly even more, either had onset of their illness during the pandemic or most of them worsening. So again, you know, understanding what developmental trauma is and our biological need for connection and safety and connection and relationship to other humans as mammals, really, when you understand that, it really helps to explain why the pandemic would have been so traumatizing. Between the fear, especially people who feel like they are particularly vulnerable with their health, would be that much more inclined to be very, very isolated and careful. So again, we're social distancing. We're many times distanced from our families. When we're seeing people, we're masked and we can't see facial affect and smiling and so on. And really just the definition of trauma is really when you're completely helpless and afraid. That was really the experience of the pandemic. I remember watching something Dr. Bessel van der Kolk had posted during that time of the pandemic, speaking to, well, what is the opposite? You know, feeling like you have empowerment or choice, regularity in your routine, like things that have gotten lost in the pandemic, and how do we bring some of that back in, even though we have to isolate in some ways.
Oh, I'm such a fan of Dr. van der Kolk's. And if you haven't read his book, The Body Keeps the Score, get it. You guys, you'll love that work. It's very fascinating. Now, since we're talking about Dr. van der Kolk, and then also we would be talking about Dr. Stephen Porges' work as well, you mentioned the word developmental trauma. Can you go to a little more detail so people know what that means?
Absolutely. It just so happens in my personal life that I grew up in a really difficult situation with wonderful human beings who are very, very smart and caring and loving, but had their own trauma, significant trauma in their childhoods. And so I was born to a mom who was only 15 years old and, you know, a father who was an alcoholic. And I have a lot of what people tend to use as like big T obvious traumas in my childhood, abuse and neglect. And so a lot of people really recognize that as being, that's what trauma is. And I don't have that, right? What I ended up realizing for myself, in addition to those things, was that probably the most significant of my traumas in terms of how it informed my ability to be in the world and be healthy had to do with what is known as developmental trauma, which is really, it's about secure attachment. It's about an infant who is completely dependent on an adult caregiver for their survival. And the ways that the adult caregiver, often the mother-infant dyad, but the way the adult caregiver helps to communicate that you will survive. So safety, you will survive today by being fed and sheltered and clothed, and everything is communicated through what you could simply define as love. But it isn't love, because it's the ways that we're communicating that love that the infant can understand. So a lot of touch, reliably comforting, responding to cries immediately and really figuring out what the crying is about so that it can be soothed and comforted, nursing on demand for a period of time, the mother's heartbeat being sung to and her vocal prosody and the ways that she's indicating that she's safe in the way that an autonomic nervous system of a developing infant can understand, being picked up when there's some sort of distress, mirroring and all the things with facial affect, which is part of our social engagement system that, again, they're all the ways that we communicate as adults, actually, safety by either welcome or warning through our voice, our inflection, our head tilt when we're listening to someone and communicating that we're in a regulated, safe feeling place and therefore safe to approach. Or maybe, you know, we've all like picked up the phone and somebody, you can tell they have a very flat affect. And so developmental trauma is really just an infant. And I really want to highlight this. It's an infant who didn't get those communications reliably enough, consistently enough, in the course of their early development. And that could happen for any number of reasons. A parent who's depressed, a parent who has an older sibling that requires a lot of attention, or a sick sibling that requires a lot of attention. I mean, really any number of reasons, right? Their own traumas that have them focused on other things. They're ill themselves, right? They're highly dysregulated themselves. And so they're not able to like fully connect and be attuned to. Attunement is a very powerful word in terms of developmental trauma. A parent who's really deeply attuned and responding to the needs of the infant on a consistent basis is communicating safety to them. And so there's so many reasons, including our culture and, you know, just being born and what we're told is, you know, let us take the baby to the nursery and you can get some sleep, right? But meanwhile, the infant is really needing that skin-to-skin contact with their parent, their mother, the voice that they've been hearing, the heartbeat that they've been hearing. And that's like an example, right?
I just want to back up. I know that it's the regular thought processes of about saying big T, little T. In my world, trauma is trauma. It's how it affects your life is the thing. I mean, I've had people tell me, and classically it would fit into the big T, or classically it would fit into the little T, and they've internalized it entirely different than what would be a classical description of it. So to me, regardless of what happened, whether it happened as an infant, happened at eight, happened as an adult, however you internalized it is to me trauma. So I wanted to know if, can we untraumatize ourselves if we're going, wow, Michaela, yep, that was my early life. I know mom cares for me, but I had a sick sibling, or maybe mom didn't care for me, or, you know, dad abandoned us. Can you reparent yourself?
Absolutely. I love this question, and I love how you gave some context for your thinking process, because I think it's really important for people to understand that developmental trauma really is probably the biggest T trauma that there is. And you're right that it is how it affects you. But ultimately, when you really understand our biological needs for safety and what it creates in the nervous system, the autonomic nervous system that is hardwired into our system from that early point of development to anticipate that we are not safe in relationship to others. And when you really appreciate that being safe and safely connected in relationship to other human beings and other mammals is actually a biological imperative. And when we don't have that, our physiologic health suffers as well as everything else. And that when you characterize big T and little T in that way, that is how it's colloquially characterized. But what you really begin to understand is that developmental trauma affects, it's ubiquitous, it affects so many of us. And that ultimately, the kinds of things that might happen that are typically labeled big T in, right, that people identify as trauma, those things are less likely to recur. And it's less likely to have familiar things in your adult life that resemble those types of traumas. Whereas when you're talking about relational trauma, well, that's every single day, right? We're encountering that the relationships that we end up developing with everyone are influenced by those early life experiences. And so often we end up repeating and getting into partnerships where the dynamic is such that it's very familiar to.
I had a friend sometime I was pointing out in a past breakup. And I love these kinds of friends. They kindly said to me, well, you do know what the common denominator to all this is, don't you?
Exactly. And the thing is, ultimately what we are usually doing is trying to heal the original wound through someone else who on some level feels familiar, but it's also deeply traumatizing. And if we don't understand what's happening in our biology, then it's easy to just, we get into that immediate survival mode. And I really want to emphasize that relational safety, again, is prioritized at the same level as physical safety to our autonomic nervous system. And so when we feel threatened, if even our ego is threatened, or we feel threatened by a partner who we love and they're disagreeing with us, this can be sometimes deeply, it can feel like if you've ever felt hooked in that moment where it's just so powerful and it feels like a life or death or like almost like survival, that is actually what's happening in your autonomic nervous system. It is, has the residue of actual survival needs not being met in infancy and early development. So can you reparent yourself?
Yeah, I was going to ask that. I said, okay, wow, this is getting more complicated. Yeah. I'm wondering, am I doomed?
No, I love it, because the reality is, yes, you can. And the thing I had hoped to share with you, which is that I remember when I really began to understand, thankfully, that my childhood trauma history was influencing and really had a direct relationship to the health consequences that I was having. I remember just beginning to understand that. And I took a workshop with Dr. Bessel van der Kolk at that time. And he really helped me to understand that what I was experiencing was more physiologic than it was psychiatric or psychological. That said, though, as I was engaging in deep trauma work, I was left with a real sense of hopelessness, because if my physical health and my healing depended on me getting through an unbelievable amount of trauma, I didn't see a particularly viable path. I didn't see one that was going to open up to me very quickly. How do you begin to sort through that over years and years and years, right? In some of the models of therapy that I was familiar with at the time, whereas what I now really understand through polyvagal theory is that there's actually an approach that doesn't require you to go and systematically begin to address each and every one of these traumas. It's actually, how do I restore a sense of safety in my own autonomic nervous system? How do I give myself the attunement and the attention and the secure attachment to myself that I maybe didn't get when I was an infant? And how do I do that so that my autonomic nervous system begins to anticipate that I'm actually safe in relationships to others, that I'm safe in the world, that I'm safe with myself, and to really begin to have that lens of safety and connection that's really reliable to see the truth of the safety of my current life, which is that I'm an adult and I have every opportunity to make different choices when things don't feel safe. I am deeply connected to so many people and deeply loved. You know, I can provide my system with the context for understanding a lot of like the discomfort that autonomic nervous system dysregulation brings. You can absolutely reparent yourself.
Although a question comes up for me, oftentimes, I'm going to put in air quotes because I don't have a better word for it. The trigger happens so fast and the response to that trigger happens so fast that I need to be aware of it. Go, okay, stop, breathe,
Absolutely.
Left turn, right turn, whatever it is. Let's talk a little bit about this wonderful, we can reparent ourselves, but does it ever become that point where it becomes automatic again? Or is it a place of where we're like, oh, okay, this is familiar, back up, breathe, stop.
So I'm going to say a little bit of both in my own, and I'm using myself as an example. I'm a few years into this, but I would imagine that that's going to continue and continue because I ultimately, polyvagal theory is how it's my orientation to the world at work with my colleagues. We're engaging in active polyvagal theory about what's happening in our personal lives and also together as a team. I get to witness this with all of the people that I work with, but ultimately, part of how we have our healing treatment programs organized is that, for example, in our restoring class, which is a nickname for restoring your innate capacity for health. But what it is it's a class on polyvagal theory that also builds in deep, safe feeling connection with other people who are your peers and have really similar stories to you and can really relate to the kinds of changes that you're looking to make in your life and starting at this root cause level with the autonomic nervous system. So ultimately, for example, in this class, part of what we do the first 2 months almost are this deep learning about the biology of how the biology responds, what to anticipate, what to look for, and then people really getting to know their own autonomic nervous system responses, noticing and paying attention before we look to make any changes at all. It's really like this deep getting to know you and combining the education of understanding what's happening with your biology and what are the triggers in your life? What are the things that you notice in your life? How does it appear in your own body? How does it appear in your relationships? And really, really getting this deep, intimate, new understanding of how your own system responds, what it is and what it isn't in terms of what your thoughts and emotions are and how that's actually driven by the state of your autonomic nervous system at any given moment. And so therefore, to answer your question, ultimately, is that yes, it becomes rote. It becomes, you learn this, you integrate it, you practice it. It is how you start to orient yourself to the world and to other relationships. You start to see it in others and you have more compassion for what you're witnessing when someone else is in a place of dysregulation. So for me, it isn't to say that I don't ever get dysregulated. It doesn't say that, there aren't certain times where, like you said, I have to really like, okay, I'm noticing this in my body. But I do have a pause button. I have that capacity now to hold the trigger, if that's a good word, right? The response, the immediate autonomic nervous system response, and to work with it and see how my own dysregulation, what is familiar about this from my past that is feeling, helping me to feel threatened in this moment, and how threatened really am I, and what is really happening, and what's happening for the other person, so that I can skillfully navigate that. And then lots of times I'm just not triggered anymore. So there's that. So that's,
I love the visual of the pause button. That's fantastic. I love that. And I also like the idea of not being triggered anymore. I find that the more I explore, the more I give voice to some of my previous triggers, they just become non-triggers. A mentor one time told me, and at first I was a little shocked. Sometimes people give you these little nuggets and you don't really understand them at the moment. You have to have enough context behind to go, oh, that's what they were talking about. And he said to me, at some point, you just have to learn to make your expectations preferences. And at first, I was felt like a slap in the face, given what I was talking about. After a few, years behind me and some context, I'm like, that offhand comment that allowed me to put so many of my triggers to rest. It's like, okay, it's not a magic bullet, guys. I'm just saying, for me, that was one of those offhand insights from somewhere that at the moment, I think that actually triggered me, actually. But at the moment, I was like, what? And then I was able to put a little more context behind everything and go, okay. And so, speaking about context, what I'd like to just, could you explain in a little more detail what polyvagal theory is? That's Dr. Stephen Porges' work, amongst others. But can you explain what that is so the people that aren't familiar with it will know?
Sure, absolutely. So the brilliant Dr. Stephen Porges was able to help develop this theory, as Jess loves to say, a theory like gravity is theory. It's true. And you only really need to understand what it is and relate to your own experience in your own body to know that it's true. But ultimately, poly means many, and it's a way of describing this autonomic nervous system and its states according to evolution, when the different states were developed. You're familiar with, a lot of people are familiar with fight or flight as being the sympathetic aspect of the autonomic nervous system. Some people are familiar with freeze and or please and appease, which is more of this dorsal vagal collapse aspect. And that's our most primitive safety protection mechanism that the autonomic nervous system employs when the other strategies don't work. And then there's this ventral vagal, most recently evolved part of our autonomic nervous system, that is really a combination of this parasympathetic, but also this more active aspect of the autonomic nervous system that is really was developed because we're mammals and we depend on human connection for survival, not just in infancy, but throughout our entire lives. When we evolved, we absolutely needed as a matter of necessity, our tribe to survive. We needed to be able to divide different responsibilities. We needed the protection of the tribe if we were going to be sick or injured, things like that. And so ultimately that need, that biological need is still within us, even though theoretically we have resources that we think we're surviving on our own, but ultimately when we're disconnected or unsafe, physiology suffers. And so polyvagal theory is a way of explaining and understanding these needs, the responses in the human body, all innervated by the vagus nerve, which also happens to innervate all the striated muscles of the face and our pharynx and larynx and the ways that that's our social engagement system where we communicate.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Somewhat, we can override it to a certain extent, but that it really has this automatic or autonomic quality to it. There are ways that we can try to present in a certain way that betrays how we're actually doing. And sometimes we're successful, but ultimately, just like we could hold our breath for a period of time, survival will come in and has its say. Ultimately, the vagus innervates our breathing and heart rate and our digestion, this social engagement system as well. And that's because safety and connection in human relationships is integral to survival.
Oh, that's fantastic. Thank you for sharing that. And you know what? Our sponsors have their say. We need to take a quick commercial break. And when we come back, we'll talk some more with Michaela Giles, co-founder of Origins Collaborative Care. We'll be right back.
The Autoimmune Hour will return after these messages from our sponsors. It's great sponsors like these that keep this show coming to you every week. Be sure and stop by understandingautoimmune.com to learn more.
Your conscious lifestyle on steroids. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Hi, it's Olivia Munn with my shelter pets, Frankie and Chance. Say hi, guys. When I adopted them, I discovered that they both have incredible personalities. Chance's sole purpose in life is to love and to be loved. Frankie is a little bit of a scoundrel and always entertaining. They're a little bit of a lot of things, but they're all pure love. Adopt pure love at theshelterpetproject.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council, the Humane Society of the United States, and Maddie's Fund.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization Their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Listen and imagine. It takes 5 seconds to send a text, and for those 5 seconds, you're driving blind.
Life is worth more than a text.
Stay alive. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, Noise, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Sharon, and of course you know me from here on the Autoimmune Hour. Maybe you don't know I'm also an author. My latest book is for kids. It's Pinky Chenille and the Rainbow Hunters, a winner of a 5-star reader's favorite review. It's perfect for your early reader and a great bedtime story for your young adventurers. Check it out over at pinkychenille.com. That's PinkyChenille.com. See you there.
Research shows we apologize up to 10 times a day, and most of the time, we say sorry as a response to someone else's mistake. What if we thanked people instead of all that unnecessary apologizing? So instead of saying, sorry, I'm rambling, you say, thank you for listening. Join us at ProjectForgive.com, a free non-religious resource on global forgiveness.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour. I'm Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com. And of course, you can find all the 400 plus episodes of the Autoimmune Hour over at UnderstandingAutoimmune.com. And tonight we're here with Michaela Giles, and she's the co-founder of Origins Collaborative Care. And she's been sharing from her own survivor to thriver story, as well as her deep dive into understanding her own traumas and her nervous system and her nervous system response. It popped up as some autoimmune conditions as well as other things. And she's been sharing with us exploration and how she became to be the director of mind, body, education, and healing over at Origins Collaborative Care. And I just love that science is catching up with a lot of us who have known this intuitively for a long time, that the traumas in our life have a physical outcome. So many times that idea, it's all in your head, is so exasperating to me. And on that topic, though, I wanted to circle back. I know in previous conversations you and I have had, Michaela, you had mentioned we have, about 10 minutes left. I want to get into this because I think this idea of it's all in your head and stuff can even start in childhood. And you were not somewhat recently diagnosed with ADHD, but on reflection, you tell this very fascinating history of, wow, that could have changed so many outcomes if somebody had noticed it before.
Absolutely. So my history involves basically, I didn't even learn this until I was in my 30s, but I was very smart, apparently, and was recommended for the gifted program in second grade, but I would not pay attention is what the frustration was. I had a really kind teacher in second grade, but unfortunately, as I was withheld from the gifted program because I wouldn't pay attention, and then had other, unfortunately, in third and fourth grade, just a teacher who was so impatient with me, and it was really very another traumatizing experience, really, to be at school and wanting to do well and wanting to be successful and unable to pay attention and really focus and learn. So I certainly would have met the criteria for an ADHD diagnosis, and that followed me throughout my entire educational career. And since I really did have an earnest desire to learn and be successful, I just assumed I must not be very intelligent. And so I really grew up believing that and believed that throughout my 20s, and was very private about words I didn't know and things like that. I would sneak away and like write something down so that I could go look it up later before we all had a device we could immediately do that with now. And so it wasn't until my mid 30s that I did get an official evaluation. I'm 48 now, so I realize that's actually a bit ago. But ultimately, I was diagnosed with ADHD at that time. And the way the doctor described it was that you have a Ferrari brain, but executive functioning Honda Civic motor. And so...
That's a great visual.
So I appreciated it. And I still didn't know how intelligent I was at that time. It reminds me actually to say that that at a certain point, there was an exercise where I was given an opportunity to answer the question, what is the greatest gift that your chronic illness brought you? And I immediately realized that in really forcing me to become my own researcher, I really developed a sense of my own intelligence and recognize now that I am quite smart, but had so much shame and embarrassment around that for most of my life. So regarding the ADHD diagnosis, what I now understand that there is some truth to what the doctor said, but the reality is that because I was in a state of, you know, I was not safe. When we don't feel safe, we can't bring on our prefrontal cortex. We're in our reptilian hindbrain where it's pure survival instinct. There's no future there. It's just now. What's going to help me survive the moment now? And so there's no ability to really, that's our prefrontal cortex is where we have our reasoning and our impulse control, none of which I had. And so that was really underdeveloped in me, my prefrontal cortex and all those neural connections, in addition to the fact that for most of my life, I really was in that reptilian hindbrain. So what's happened over the last several years with respect to neuroplasticity and its possibilities is that I really no longer identify as being someone who has ADHD. I've created enough new neural pathways and a lot of connectivity in my prefrontal cortex. So I'm mostly living in my, able to use my executive functioning to learn and to pay attention and so on. So my colleague would say, as a medical professional, that really ADHD is, it's a diagnosis of exclusion. You rule out everything else that you can find. But one of the exclusions these days is not trauma or chronic stress or autonomic nervous system dysregulation. So that would be a more appropriate exclusion to also consider when people think they have ADHD.
Wow. I had no idea. Wow. We should have talked more about that deeper when we first met. That is fascinating. So who would I ask if, let's say maybe I relate to parts of that and I'm like, maybe I've even been diagnosed with ADHD. Who would I seek out help from? I mean, I don't know. Is there a label for someone that does that kind of work to help you rebuild your neural pathways and activate the frontal cortex and really fire up that Ferrari engine?
Well, ultimately, I think what the truth of it is that, again, if you can really lean into polyvagal theory, of course, this is what we do at Origins Collaborative Care, but if you can really help your autonomic nervous system to understand that it's safe and to recognize the safety that's actually present in your present day circumstances, that eventually what ends up happening is that, I mean, for starters, really learning that and reshaping the autonomic nervous system is neuroplasticity. And so you're developing new neural pathways, but you're also strengthening your capacity to stay in that prefrontal cortex, that higher thinking region of the brain. And also as people physically heal, you're more able to stay in that region of the brain because this really requires so much more actual energy. So people who are exhausted, people who don't feel well, people who are in pain, people who really have, you know, their mitochondria are struggling and so they're really fatigued. Ultimately, that also pushes us back into that reptilian brain because it doesn't require very much at all. It really is very fuel efficient. And so as people heal, again, this is like it kind of all comes together where there's physical healing on board, you're feeling safer, you're anticipating safety in your relationships and in other areas of your life. And this just continues to get strengthened. And so that really is what's needed.
So a quick question. We had Dr. Ann Hill on a few weeks ago for a great episode about MCAST. And I'm just curious, does this play into it? I mean...
Absolutely.
It sounds like with the descriptions of MCAST, there was a component of the hypervigilance going on.
Oh, you're good, Sharon.
No, I just listened to Dr. Ann.
No, they're completely analogous to each other. They're completely analogous to each other. It's such an astute observation. So MCAST is our mast cells, our most primitive immune cells. And ultimately, for some reason, often environmental, often trauma related, often other types of environmental toxicities, what have you. For some reason, the mast cells have been under such an assault of some sort that they end up becoming not dissimilar to PTSD. They end up responding and reacting. This MCAS in and of itself is really this hypervigilance. As you said, it's an inappropriate response to otherwise benign stimuli. So as we're saying, you know, helping your autonomic nervous system to really recognize safety, likewise, helping the mast cells to recognize the safety that's actually present. So there's really a very similar thing. And also they're very corollary because when we go into a stress response, hypothalamus releases corticotropin releasing factor, and mast cells have a receptor for that. Before the signal has even reached the adrenals to say, hey, let's go with the cortisol and adrenaline of a stress response. Before that even happened, because our immune cells, those mast cells are the most primitive, they've got a receptor, meets, it docks, releases all their mediators, right? So those mediators that are inflammatory, pro-inflammatory, reacting to different things, every time we have a stress response, our mast cells are degranulating. And so getting MCAS under control, there's so many different approaches, and many of them are wonderful, especially to help like get symptoms under control so that we can have less stress responses, right? But that ultimately, if we can regulate our autonomic nervous system and have it anticipate safety, including safety trying different foods, safety eating histamines, safety trying different supplements, right? We've become hypervigilant because we have had these reactions when we have MCAS that are sometimes random and make no sense, and they're not consistent. And on Tuesday, this is fine. And on Thursday, you have hives or migraine or tinnitus or, right? And so ultimately, it is this, again, combined effort process that is bidirectional, and they really support one another, that we get the mast cells stabilized, we get our nervous system stabilized, and we really worked together to create that safety, and they really are interrelated.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
You know, I've been a profound believer in the understanding of my autonomic nervous system. The more I learned about it, the more I learned about Bessel's work and Stephen Porges' work and all of that, how much it's changed my life and my healing path. And to me, I really keep pushing and hoping that the rest of the medical community catches up, and that this is not just some disease du jour. They're calling MCAS a disease du jour, and you know, that's not true either. MCAS is a real thing, and I'm really hoping that pretty soon the medical community at large catches up with this idea that the autonomic nervous system is really important.
So just to give a little context, you had said, you know, yes, science is catching up. We're understanding more and more about how childhood trauma and things like that influence health in even children and adults. But something that I think is really relevant to polyvagal theory that I think is extremely compelling, and we found this article after we had developed OCC and opening and creating our program. But nevertheless, we found an article on PubMed, and we found many, many articles actually to support our assertion that this was really the foundation to all physical healing, polyvagal theory, and having safety in your autonomic nervous system. But with respect to polyvagal theory, especially what we end up understanding is that connection is really this critical, safe feeling connection is really this critical piece of that for us as mammals. The PubMed article goes, humans need others to survive. Regardless of one's sex, country, or culture of origin, age, or economic background, social connection is crucial to human development, health, and survival. The evidence supporting this contention is unequivocal. When considering the umbrella term of social connection and its constituent components, there are perhaps no other factors that can have such a large impact on both length and quality of life. Yet social connection is largely ignored as a health determinant because public and private stakeholders are not entirely sure how to act. And in addition, the pace of developing effective social relationship interventions is considerably slow. However, this is unlikely to change until social connection receives greater public health prioritization in terms of both attention and resources. So that's from 2017. So we're really proud to be among the very first to really integrate that intervention into our own treatment model. And we really hope that it becomes the standard of care at some point. But that science has been around for a really long time, decades actually.
Sometimes it takes years before it catches up into the community. It's really sad. It's interesting you bring that up because just as we were getting ready to start our recording, I was listening to Brené Brown's speech and I wrote something down. I love how her mind works. I don't always agree, but I love how her mind works. Listen to as many points of view as you can and find the nuggets there. I wrote this down. She was talking about, this was the one thing she, in her quote, she said she knew for sure, in the absence of love and belonging, there's always suffering. And I was just like, wow. So I said, you know, I wrote that down too because I was thinking to myself, wow, that's pretty profound. I wanted to find someone to talk to about it on it. And lo and behold, here you are.
Lo and behold. Well, and that's just it, right? And people would assume the suffering is, right, heartbreak, loneliness, you know, sadness, missing people, not, you know, those types of social things. And what we're saying is that in addition to that, our biology knows and that our physical health actually suffers because we need it for survival. So
this is fascinating. We're going to have you back because we're just about out of time. I think we'll have you and Jessica back together and we'll just have a round robin here of this. We could go so much deeper on this community. Sorry that we got to this place where we're going to have to put a little bookmark here, everyone. I hope you were able to understand and really sink this in because this is really important to being able to move to an even higher state of thriving. So since we're just about out of time, just have a couple of minutes left, Michaela, please tell everyone how they can find you and where they can find Origins Collaborative Care.
Sure. Origins Collaborative Care, our website is www.originscollaborativecare.com. It's really quite a large website. We did that somewhat intentionally. You could get lost in there. There's a lot of information to really learn. And when you're invested in your healing, it's, I think, helpful to really have a good understanding of how we approach things very differently. We're really the only healthcare practice that administers polyvagal theory as part of the treatment, including community. So it's well worth that. And we do have opportunities for anyone who wants to have a free discovery call with us. There's a place on our webpage for you to link in there and get, there's a button that says get started. So we invite everybody to have an opportunity to come and talk to us what they're experiencing and how we can help them.
Well, fantastic. Thank you so much, Michaela. And everyone, we'll have the website over at understandingautoimmune.com as well on their page for the show. Sometimes I know you guys are driving or whatever out there walking and don't have your pencil with you. So we'll have the originscollaborativecare.com URL over there for you at Understanding Autoimmune. And yeah, we're going to have you back on because this, we could just go so much deeper here. Everyone, thank you so much for being part of my community. It's fantastic. I love you all and I appreciate you all. And going along this healing pathway with me is just always fantastic. I meet the most amazing people through you guys. Thank you so much. Everyone, have a great week. Whatever your adventures, join me next week for another brand new episode. Enjoy.
The information provided on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune, and Life Interrupted Radio, including the websites understandingautoimmune.com and lifeinterruptedradio.com, plus social media, is for educational purposes only. What you read, hear, and see on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune, and Life Interrupted Radio, and its websites and other media outlets is based on experience only. The information should never be used for any legal, diagnostic, or treatment purposes.
For the next few minutes, we'll be providing a guided meditation. Meditation is a positive way to help reset your day and does require specific, targeted attention and focus. Please do not drive or operate machinery during this time. As we say here, drive when you drive and meditate when you meditate.
Find a comfortable spot. Take a moment to move about. Shake out all the nooks and crannies. Get comfortable. Shake out your fingers and your toes, taking some nice deep breaths, and extend the exhale. If it feels right for you, make a noise on the exhale. Great way to let go of any last little stress. In the next few moments, go to your favorite spot. You know the place. Real or imaginary doesn't matter here. Take a moment to savor the colors, the smells, the textures and the patterns. Continuing to breathe deep and extend the exhale. Clearing your mind of any little thoughts that are just wandering through. Letting your mind relax as your body is relaxed. That's right. Take this time to explore your inner truth. That's right. What is true for you? That's right. Continuing to breathe deep as you explore what is true for me. If any little thoughts wander through that don't feel quite right, don't feel the way you want them to, take a moment to explore them. Thanking them for showing up as they did. That's right. Noticing what you would like to change and allowing that to happen. Continuing to breathe deep through each change, each thought, each moment. As your inner truth begins to take shape, continue to let creativity and imagination guide you. That's right. Let it go. Continuing to breathe deep. Anything that no longer works for you, let it go. Keeping only that which is for your highest good. That's right. Take all the time you need in the next few moments now to thank those parts of you that shared their inner truth for you. That's right. Thank each and every part for sharing, knowing that you can come back here at any time to continue this exploration. Anytime, anywhere. Giving gratitude for this moment, this place, and this time. Take some nice, deep, cleansing breaths as you begin to come back to the present moment. Right here, right now. Alert, awake, and ready to begin again. Eyes wide open. Nice deep breath to welcome you back. That's right. Welcome back.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.